Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman. My fellow Americans, my fellow Democrats, I proudly accept the nomination of our party. This moment is one of personal pride and gratification, yet one cannot help but reflect the deep sadness that we feel over the troubles and the violence which have erupted regrettably and tragically in the streets of this great city, and for the personal injuries which have occurred. Surely we have now learned the lesson that violence breeds counter-violence, and it cannot be condoned, whatever the source. I know that every delegate to this convention shares tonight my sorrow and my distress over these incidents. And may we, for just one moment, in sober reflection and serious purpose, may we just quietly and silently, each in our own way, pray for our country. And may we just share for a moment a few of those immortal words of the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, words which I think may help heal the wounds, ease the pain, and lift our hearts. Listen to this immortal saint. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Those are the words of a saint. And may those of us of less purity listen to them well. And may America tonight resolve that never, never again shall we see what we have seen. Yes, I accept your nomination in this spirit that I have spoken. knowing that the months and the years ahead will severely test our America. And might I say that as this America is tested, that once again we give our testament to America. And I do not think it is sentimental, nor is it cheap, but I think it is true that each and every one of us in our own way should once again reaffirm to ourselves and our posterity that we love this nation, we love America. But take heart, my fellow Americans. This is not the first time that our nation has faced a challenge to its life and its purpose. And each time that we've had to face these challenges, we have emerged with new greatness and with new strength. We must make this moment of crisis, we must make it a moment of creation. As it has been said, in the worst of times, a great people must do the best of things, and let us do it. We stand at such a moment now in the affairs of this nation because, my fellow Americans, something new, something different has happened. There is an end of an era, and there is the beginning of a new day. And it is the special genius of the Democratic Party that it welcomes change. Not as an enemy, but as an ally. Not as a force to be suppressed, but as an instrument of progress to be encouraged. This week, our party has debated the great issues before America in this very hall. And had we not raised these issues, troublesome as they were, we would have ignored the reality of change. Had we just papered over the differences between us with empty platitudes, instead of frank, hard debate, we would deserve the contempt of our fellow citizens and the condemnation of history. Yes, we dared to speak out. And we have heard hard and sometimes bitter debate. But I submit that this is the debate, and this is the work of a free people, the work of an open convention, and the work of a political party responsive to the needs of this nation. Democracy affords debate, discussion, and dissent. But, my fellow Americans, it also requires decision. And we have decided here, not by edict, but by vote, not by force, but by ballot. Majority rule has prevailed, but minority rights are preserved. There is always the temptation to leave the scene of battle in anger and despair. But those who know the true meaning of democracy accept the decision of today, but never relinquishing their right to change it tomorrow. In the space of but a week, this convention has literally laid the foundations of a new Democratic Party structure in America. From precinct level to the floor of this convention, we have revolutionized our rules and our procedures. And that revolution is in the proud tradition of our party. It is in the tradition of Franklin Roosevelt, who knew that America had nothing to fear but fear itself. And it is in the tradition of that one and only Harry Truman, who let 'em have it and told it like it was. And that's the way we're going to do it from here on out. And it is in the tradition of that beloved man, Adlai Stevenson, who talked sense to the American people. And oh, tonight, how we miss this great, good, and gentle man of peace in America. And my fellow Americans, all that we do and all that we ever hope to do must be in the tradition of John F. Kennedy, who said to us, ask not what your country can do for you, but what can you do for your country? My fellow Democrats and fellow Americans, in that spirit of that great man, let us ask what together we can do for the freedom of man. And what we are doing is in the tradition of Lyndon B. Johnson, who rallied a grief-stricken nation. A grief-stricken nation when our leader was stricken by the assassin's bullet, and said to you and said to me and said to all the world, let us continue. And in the space of 5 years since that tragic moment, President Johnson has accomplished more of the unfinished business of America than any of his modern predecessors. And I truly believe that history will surely record the greatness of his contribution to the people of this land. And tonight to you, Mr. President, I say thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, my fellow Democrats, we have recognized, and indeed we must recognize, the end of an era and the beginning of a new day. And that new day belongs to the people, to all the people, everywhere in this land of the people, to every man, woman, and child that is a citizen of this republic. And within that new day lies nothing less than the promise seen a generation ago by that poet Thomas Wolfe. To every man his chance, to every man regardless of his birth, his shining golden opportunity, to every man the right to live and to work and to be himself and to become whatever thing his manhood and his vision can combine to make him. This is the promise of America. Yes, the new day is here. Across America, throughout the entire world, the forces of emancipation are at work. We hear freedom's rising chorus. Let me live my own life. Let me live in peace. Let me be free, say the people. And that cry is heard today in our slums, on our farms and in our cities. It is heard from the old as well as from the young. It is heard in Eastern Europe and it is heard in Vietnam. And it will be answered by us in how we face the three realities that confront this nation. The first reality is the necessity for peace in Vietnam and in the world. The second reality is the necessity for peace and justice in our cities and in our nation. And the third reality is the paramount necessity for unity, unity in our country. Let me speak first then about Vietnam. There are differences, of course. Serious differences within our party on this vexing and painful issue of Vietnam. And these differences are found even within the ranks of all of the Democratic presidential candidates. But might I say to my fellow Americans that once you have examined the differences I hope you will also recognize the much larger areas of agreement. Let those who believe that our cause in Vietnam has been right, or those who believe that it has been wrong, agree here and now, that neither vindication nor repudiation will bring peace or be worthy of this country. The question is not the yesterdays, but the question is, what do we do now? No one knows what the situation in Vietnam will be when the next president of the United States takes that oath of office on January 20th, 1969. But every heart in America prays that by then we shall have reached a ceasefire in all Vietnam and be in serious negotiation towards a durable peace. Meanwhile, as a citizen, a candidate, and vice president, I pledge to you and to my fellow Americans that I shall do everything within my power, within the limits of my capacity and ability, to aid the negotiations and to bring a prompt end to this war. Remind you of the words of a truly great citizen of the world, Winston Churchill. It was he who said, and we would heed his words well, those who use today and the present to stand in judgment of the past may well lose the future. And if there is any one lesson that we should have learned, it is that the policies of tomorrow need not be limited by the policies of yesterday. My fellow Americans, if it becomes my high honor to serve as president of these states and people, I shall apply that lesson to the search for peace in Vietnam as to all other areas of national policy. Now let me ask you, do you remember these words at another time in a different place? Peace and freedom do not come cheap. And we are destined, all of us here today, to live out most, if not all, of our lives in uncertainty and challenge and peril. The words of a prophet? Yes. The words of a president? Yes. The words of the challenge of today? Yes. And the words of John Kennedy to you and to me and to posterity. Last week, we witnessed once again in Czechoslovakia the desperate attempt of tyranny to crush out the forces of liberalism by force and brutal power, to hold back change. But in Eastern Europe as elsewhere, the old era will surely end.